Welcome to Cover Girls, Drinking and Overthinking, in which we take a story we love and analyze how well it was adapted.
I'm Chris.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Allison. Join us as we meticulously pick apart our favorite stories until no stone is left unturned. It'll be bookish.
It'll be boozy.
It'll be bantersome.
And it won't be boring. So grab a drink and get ready to overthink. Let's dig in.
We are back with episode 3 of the movie Holes, and let's just jump right in, Kristen and Kristen. Chris, my sister, what are you drinking?
I am drinking a Diet Cherry Coke.
We've had drinks already for 2 episodes, so some of us are sobering up.
We're having to switch things out quite a bit.
Yeah. Kristen, what are you drinking?
I am branching out a little bit. We have got peach Jello shots. Yeah, peach jello is a thing, turns out.
I love that. I want one.
Yes. Oh, and peach Haribo candies as well.
Oh, yum. I love those.
I'm not doing the onions. I'm just doing peaches. Allison is braver than I.
Yeah, once we get into going through the book, we're going to have to come up with more creative drinks as well. And I've got a few onion ideas for those. For me today, I was not as creative on our little break, and I'm still having my peach mimosa, but I'll have something different for episode 4. And like I said, some of us are sobering up. Some of us is not me.
And I'm glad you're enjoying yourself.
All right. Are you guys ready?
Let's jump in.
Let's go.
So we talked about last episode at the end how we met Sigourney Weaver as the warden. She's a powerful boss. We love her. And they decide to start digging around where they believe X-Ray found the lipstick tube. They also don't know it's a lipstick tube yet. So after that, we get back to camp, and I just immediately have a little bit of an issue with the way they filmed this. The kids are just throwing their shovels to the side as they walk in. And that seems contradictory to the point of this camp, which is like to learn
responsibility.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, and we also know that under no circumstances are the two male adults doing work that they think the kids should be doing. So like, no. they're not going to pick up after the kids.
Exactly. No. Who's picking them up?
Maybe playing devil's advocate here. I think it's possible that maybe the rule, because they all come in at different times, right? So mm-hmm. maybe the rule is all the shovels have to be back in the library by 10 p.m. Mm-hmm. And so some of the kids are like, you know what? Screw it. We'll do it. We do it later. I don't know.
I think
you're right. I think it's a plot hole.
Yeah.
Not a plot hole, but a...
But it's...
Inconsistent.
Exactly. So we'll move on. And by the way, listeners, I'm trying to get better about like moving us quicker. I can't believe we already went from 2 episodes to 4, but we will finish this in 4. So we're going to move on to the flashback of Kate Barlow and Sam. And this is the whole I can fix that scene. And guys,
there is no millennial that doesn't have a special place in their heart for Dulé Hill saying, I can fix that. I can fix that. He is so, I put it all caps, he's so gentle. Yes.
So gentle, but masculine as well. Gentle masculinity. I mean, it's beautiful. It also reminds me of As You Wish.
Oh, totally.
It's simple and memorable and gentle. I love it. Oh,
it's a beautiful couple's catchphrase. The two of them both are so gentle. And again, especially because we've seen Patricia Arquette be so strident in other mm-hmm. roles. Her gentleness here feels so beautiful and small. And I also have to say, I love that she doesn't lose that when she's yeah. kissing Kate Barlow. But the two of them have this like softness that stands out in the old timey world of the 19th century.
Can I say that it's interesting, Chris, that you brought up Princess Bride, because Arquette reminds me of Robin Wright. They're actually quite yes. similar to me.
Oh, yeah. I can see that.
Yeah, I can see that as well.
Mm-hmm. I thought you said our cat, and I was like, why are you talking about your cat? Why does that remind you of Robin Wright?
I don't okay, have yes. one, but I wish. Okay.
Can I bring up really quick the fact that they're using Annabelle Lee? as the poem that these two bond over.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously Edgar Allan Poe wrote very much in like the Gothic style and dealt a lot with themes of life and death. And Annabel Lee is the story of a man who was in love with a woman, but then she catches a chill and it's implied that she dies. And then she gets taken away from him and she gets, you know, shut up in a tomb. At its most basic, it's about a man who falls in love with a girl who dies. Mm-hmm. But which is obviously very applicable, because he wrote in that style that very much blurred the supernatural and the grotesque and the line between life and death, the poem never says that she dies. It says she catches a chill and then she is shut up in a sepulcher, in a tomb. And a lot of this, because of the idea, the generations, the curses, the fact that Sam keeps showing up to multiple people even after he's dead,
yeah,
in the form of hallucinations or ghostly apparitions or what have you, there is a lot of blurring of the idea between life and death in this movie as well. So it's a very interesting little nod there.
It was very apt.
Yes.
Yes. So Sam fixes the roof, the window, the door. We've got this whole montage. And
he paints this house. He paints the schoolhouse.
I know. Oh, he's just so cute. Their relationship is so cute. And then we move forward to Kate teaching a classroom of adults, which includes Trout, the mm-hmm. mayor's son.
Which, by the way, was a very common... I did a lot of like prairie I've read the whole series of Little House on the Prairie, which is several books for people who don't know. And that kind of thing was very common. A lot of adults didn't know how to read. So they would do children classes in the morning and adult classes at night.
Perfect. I was going to ask about that actually. Like what are the constructs of this world where adults are being taught? Like why are they being taught? So
it was very normal. Yeah. They used to do, they didn't have anything to do back then. For fun, they would have adult spelling bees.
I want to be in an adult spelling bee.
Screw this podcast. We're starting an adult spelling bee because it's all I've ever wanted, really.
Oh, same. Oh
all
my
right,
God.
That's going to be a special edition of this podcast is an adult spelling bee between the three of us.
Okay, Patreon content. Once we get big enough to make a Patreon, we are going to do an adult spelling bee.
An adult spelling bee.
Hell yes.
Yes.
Okay. Trout asks her out, and he's an entitled prick. He's like in the classroom going, oh, well, I wrote down the quote. Let's see. The duck may swim on the lake, but my daddy owns the lake.
Oh, he's a man of wit.
Yes.
And repartee.
So extra.
Also very fitting that his name is Trout and they own a lake, right?
Yes.
That dries up and Trout can't live without the lake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like we've said a million times over the course of watching this movie, nothing wasted. Not a thing.
Nothing.
The screenwriter's a genius.
So he asks her out. He stays after class and he is like, oh, come out on the lake with me sometime. I have a new motorboat or steamboat.
No, well, he says motorboat, and I was wondering about that.
He says motorboat, and it kind of threw me.
I'm going to just Google that. Y'all keep talking amongst yourself. When was the motorboat?
So, yeah, I'm not sure what kind of boat it was, and we'll get back to that. But I want to say that I admire Kate Barlow's ability to just say no without explaining herself.
Mm-hmm.
He says, will you go out with me? And she says, no, thank you. And he keeps pushing and she says, no, thank you. She says it again. And she doesn't feel the need to go, because I already have a boyfriend, or because I like girls instead, or because like I sometimes myself, I feel the need to come up with an excuse. But sometimes you're just not interested. You just don't want to go. So she says that twice. And then finally he pushes her and he is like, well, why not? Blah, blah, blah.
Nobody says no to me.
He says, nobody says no to me. And she says, I just did.
I wanted the part of me that is rooted so deeply in practicality wanted her to be more careful. I wish, like the whole time I was like, just be so freaking careful. Like, you can be in love, but don't be stupid. If you know this is illegal, be freaking careful, please. And I was so worried that like, you know, like he's the only other one in Dulé Hill. Sam is the only other one in the room right there. And I feel like it would have been so easy for him to make that connection of like, mm-hmm. is that the reason?
Yeah. But that's a great...
Well, I was just going to say, this all kind of goes back to the way we were raised, right?
Yeah.
We have been taught to not step on men's feelings. If they are asking us out, you know, that's why we make excuses. That's why we soften the blow, because we are worried about what the consequences will be.
Yeah. To be fair, that I do that with everybody. I'm just terrified of hurting anybody's feelings at any point. It is not a sexist thing. It's a I lack self-confidence thing.
Well, I will say,
Miss Kate does not.
I will say that it's something that I feel like was taught to me. You don't make yourself any more of a target than you already are, just naturally.
Yes.
Yes. And so I think that's probably also why, like, my instinct would be to give an excuse to say, oh, you know, like, I'm actually engaged to a man back in, like, you know, New York. Like, I don't know. But
well, I was going to say, too, like, there aren't really any excuses that she could have given. Like, he knows everybody in town. Like, that's, you know, he would know if she were engaged to somebody in town or out of town.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she can't say, I'm not interested in dating at the moment, because, I mean, she's a 25-year-old woman who is very obviously 40. Either of those, 25 unmarried, even 25 and unmarried is like,
at that time, yeah, totally.
So there's no excuse that she could have given.
Yeah. I guess she could have just said, I intend to be a spinster. I don't wish to marry. I mean,
just don't want to.
Yeah.
But the point is, why can't you just say, I don't want to? No, thank
you. Yeah. And that's what she did. Because we really shouldn't have to ever say, I mean, no is no, and that's enough.
Yeah. It just is what it is.
I think it's more of an option that we have now. Please continue.
Yes.
And yeah, it's good to recognize that back then it wasn't as much of an option. And I understand the frustration of being like, why aren't you understanding your situation more? This is the situation you're in, which is different than the one we're all in now. So,
and it had consequences.
If I were kissing somebody that it were illegal for me to kiss, I would close the mother flipping windows.
Totally.
They were not careful about that.
I just, this is so stupid, but I just realized that if Sam hadn't fixed the windows, he would still be alive.
Oh my gosh.
Okay.
And that is what we call dramatic irony.
Yes. Okay, oof. Moving on. That's gutting.
So don't fix things too good, everybody. So, I have to also write down, I did not cry during this movie when I was young. I was like, oh, how sad. I started getting very emotional when they were kissing because of how gentle he was and because he was like comforting her. Mm-hmm. It was so beautiful and so sweet. And I also was crying because I knew how ill-fated it was. And then as soon as we see in the next scene, we see that like Trout goes nuts and goes after Sam. Yeah. And Go ahead.
So listeners, what's happened is that Kate is crying over her book in the schoolhouse. And Sam comes up and in true Sam fashion goes, I can fix that.
I can fix
regarding her tears. And it's the most beautiful moment. That's when they first kiss. Kind of a weird time to kiss someone, like your kiss fixes someone's grief, but whatever. So they kiss.
It's really fictional cute. Grief, though, you know, like over a book.
Yeah.
It's adorable. So they kiss. That's when Trout sees it. And we're moving on to the schoolhouse is about to be burned. So go ahead, Kristen.
Oh, so I was just going to say, I went from being very misty to full-blown ugly crying as soon as we see that their revenge against Sam has included his harmless donkey and Mary Lou, the beloved donkey, who is beloved for no reason other than she looks super sweet and soft and loving, and he loves her, and that means because he is gentle that she is also gentle, has been killed. And as soon as we see her, crying.
Supposedly that donkey has been alive for over 100 years.
Yeah, supposedly. Uh-huh.
So that's even more detrimental. And quick criticism of the movie, that donkey is totally a puppet.
It's so bad.
Wait, are we talking about even at the... Okay,
the dead
maybe
one.
I'm an idiot.
The dead, okay, one. The dead one. Yeah, thank yeah, you. Yeah.
I
the
was
dead
like, no, yeah. It's a donkey. Yeah. No, that did... It was a very felt donkey.
Yes. Yes.
Which made me feel a little bit better because of how sad I was. It's not real. It's not real.
Yeah, exactly. And then... We get to, and sorry to kind of push you guys
along. No, I just stop. Please stop apologizing. You're just doing your job.
So we get to the lynching. Sam gets killed, and he's on his little rowboat, the Mary Lou, and the guys who kill him are on the new and improved steamboat. Or what did you find? Was it a steamboat?
He says it's a motorboat. The motorboat, apparently, was invented in 1886. So that, like, kind of
makes sense. Okay.
So then they're on his motorboat he was bragging about. How just sucky is this? It just hurt my heart.
Her cry after she sees him fall after he's been shot,
mm-hmm.
crying his name one last time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Total anguish.
I was ugly crying in a way that I had not. I remembered that it was sad. I did not expect it to hit me that way. As an adult.
One thing that didn't really 100% make sense to me, but you know, sometimes actions like those that were against Sam and Kate are not logical. They come from a very emotional place. They burned the schoolhouse.
Why did they burn the schoolhouse?
The school in.
That was my
it
first thought.
It doesn't even
too.
Make sense.
She doesn't like live in the schoolhouse.
Oh, well, first maybe she does.
Well, maybe.
She might, but we have
but
no reason to
But they're
going
to have to
that.
Build a new schoolhouse for the new mm-hmm. teacher that's going to come teach their kids.
Mm-hmm. You are punishing your own kids by doing this.
Yes. Yeah. I thought that was a little illogical.
Yeah.
They were acting on emotion and anger.
Yeah.
I think that's the only way to phrase it is that they were just like, meh, let's kill things.
They wanted to take something from her, teach her a lesson as yeah. well as teach him a lesson.
Yes.
But
and it's
yeah.
illogical.
It's yeah. illogical.
And I think we have to point out, just because we come back to it later, that she tries to go for help. She tries to go to the sheriff. The sheriff is drunk. And instead of helping her, he probably gives her the idea for where Kiss and Kate Barlow are from. He grabs mm-hmm. her and says, give me a kiss. And then he mm-hmm. says, you know, this is why we're going to kill him. I will say this is the stupidest semantics ever. But is this still a lynching if it's not a hanging?
Technically, the definition of lynching doesn't only like equate to hanging. So hanging was the most common form.
It's usually associated. Yes.
Most commonly, but it's any form of killing someone where they didn't get a trial. Yeah. Mob justice. They didn't get to speak for themselves.
Oh, mm-hmm. no, I'm very glad. I did not know that until now. Okay. Yeah. But so she, yeah. So the sheriff, instead of helping her, tries to get her to kiss him, and we see the first time, you know, where Kiss and Kate Barlow comes from.
And she shows up in her red outfit.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes. Skipping ahead to that. But yes, because as we discussed earlier, the only time that red is such a significant color in this movie, the only time previously that we have seen red on a character is on our main character, Stanley.
Yep. And I want to go back. We are basically at the Kiss and Kate Barlow transformation point, mm-hmm. but I want to go back for 1 second and say that the sheriff says, ain't against the law for you to kiss him, only for him to kiss you. And that's mm-hmm. just like so problematic. It hurts me. Like that was something that two people participated in equally. They were both consenting. They both wanted it. And it just, that's a gut-wrenching.
But he
line.
Received all of the blame.
Yeah.
Right. Well, but the idea at the time was that no self-respecting white woman or white person would kiss a black person. So therefore he was raping her.
Right. Exactly.
Yes.
It must be non-consensual.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is just so sad. Let's see. So Kate Barlow turns bad. She becomes Kiss and Kate Barlow.
She becomes
she shows up
Kiss
in a red
and
dress.
Kate Barlow. In yeah. that beautiful red dress. And again,
God,
yeah, we're changing the
gorgeous.
Color palette. We're changing the character.
Mm-hmm. And she kills the sheriff. She kisses him like, oh, now you want that kiss? That was her origin
yep.
story.
Mm-hmm.
Because we talked about that before. She's taking that kiss back. The kiss was something that he tried to use against her, that Trout used against her. And instead mm-hmm. it becomes a symbol mm-hmm. of her power. The last thing you want is a kiss from Kate Barlow.
And y'all, I have to say, if I went through what she went through, I would turn bad too. I kind of get it. I don't condone killing people or robbing them. Okay, PSA, don't condone it. But I understand why she became that way. And I think I would do the same thing.
And I think another reason in terms of story structure, why they burn the schoolhouse, only from the writer's standpoint, is they very effectively leave her with nothing.
Yeah.
She has nothing right. to go back to. So it makes even more sense from a story perspective for her to completely become an outlaw.
Yes.
And we kind of get the idea that she didn't really have any reason for robbing banks, except that it was something to do that was an act of rebellion. She clearly mm-hmm. didn't want the money. She didn't spend it.
Yeah.
She just wanted to lash out.
I think she wanted to be understood and seen, acknowledged.
Yeah.
I think there's a sense of like, I went through shit and I need you guys to all see it.
I wish I didn't understand that feeling so well.
Yes.
It's very hard to be going through something and not have people acknowledge what you're going through. And she went through something horrific.
Are we ready to move on?
Please,
yes. Going back to camp? Okay. So Magnet steals the sunflower seeds and he throws them to Caveman, and Caveman doesn't catch them. And then they get... Oh, actually, I have questions about this. It seems like Magnet just threw them willy-nilly. I don't feel like he was throwing them to Caveman. Was he? Because they just kind of ended up in this hole.
I have another... Well, they were throwing them from person to person. Something I noticed that I wanted to bring up is this is... Once he becomes Caveman, right? In the earlier scenes that we talked about, he's always Caveman. They never address each other by their Christian names.
Right.
Until this scene. And then he becomes Stanley again.
Right.
When they're yelling at him, they're saying, Stanley, catch.
That's interesting.
Oh, that is interesting.
And then, they say it, I believe, twice. The first time it's something like, Stanley, catch. He misses it. And then they're like, Stanley, what'd you do?
Right.
So I had a couple thoughts that I wasn't sure about. One was the possibility that those were ad-libs by the kids that got left in by accident. Another was, obviously, we know that they film movies out of continuity, out of sequence. And so it's possible that, like, this was initially intended to be earlier in the movie before he became Caveman. There is also a third possibility that, and this doesn't work quite as well because I ran it back and they definitely yell Stanley catch before he drops them. But it did occur to me that maybe as soon as he gets in trouble, they're like, you're not one of us. You're Stanley again.
Like, you don't have your status anymore.
Yeah.
Now you're going to get in trouble as Stanley.
Right. We're not associated with you. We're friends with Caveman.
Yes.
We don't know no Stanley.
Yeah.
I think that's a really accurate assessment. I'm going to move forward. So Caveman does take the blame willingly, and Mr. Sir takes him to the warden. And I have issues with Sir shows up and says, I found something interesting in Caveman's hole. Are you an idiot? Don't you know the warden's going to get excited about that? And she's not going to understand what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That bothers me. Of course she's going to be mad at you. And then we have the famous rattlesnake nail polish scene.
Mm-hmm. Can I talk about the rattlesnake venom?
Yes.
It's pink. It's not red. She doesn't get to be red. But, oh, she wants to be red. Pink is close to red. She wants to be Kate Barlow, right? All she's after is Kate Barlow, finding Kate Barlow. She's obsessed with Kate Barlow. She even, her expression of femininity, nail polish / lipstick, is a bright color. It's not quite red, but it's pink. And it's very deadly, right? Kissing Kate Barlow only kisses the people she kills. Her expression of femininity has rattlesnake venom in it. They both use their expressions of femininity, feminine beauty, as a thing that's deadly, but hers is pink. She doesn't get to be red. She's not kissing Kate Barlow.
But doesn't she wear a red shirt at one point?
Does she? I have no idea.
I think
walk it back. Check the tapes.
Chocotopes. I don't know if she does. I remember her intro outfit was like a blue floral shirt.
Yes, yeah. I do remember that.
I don't know, though. Moving forward, I'm not sure what her other outfits were.
I'm actually not sure. I also want to point out, just as a little fun fact, that we see the reward. We see all the wanted posters for Kiss and Kate Barlow. And we notice they were offering $500 for her capture, dead or alive. So I translated that. It's about $20,000 today.
Okay.
Oh.
I was curious how badly they wanted her. $20,000? Yeah. They wanted her pretty bad.
Oh, guys. Oh, go ahead. What? Sorry.
I was going to say, I don't think that's enough.
Yeah, I was also going to say that.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I would expect at least 100,000.
Well, see, to me, again, that implies that she really wasn't killing as many people.
Maybe so. Maybe she wasn't as dangerous.
As notorious.
Yes. She was robbing, but she was not, she really wasn't killing. I don't think she killed that much.
I have a really random note here that in this scene, Mr. Sir, before he gets, you know, slashed in the face, he's eating something that is lime green.
It's candy fruit slices is what he's eating. I saw them in a very earlier scene.
To me, it looks like the broken base of a plant pot. Like
it is because it's like a candied lime wedge.
Okay.
I noticed that in the scene, I believe, when he gives Caveman his oranges for the first time, his orange outfits for the first time. And I saw him holding the tin of candy. He's got like lemons and oranges and stuff too.
I'm so glad you could clear that up for me because I was baffled. So then we get to the rattlesnake nail polish, and obviously a very memorable scene by Sigourney Weaver where she's like, it makes it shine. The venom is the secret ingredient, that whole thing. And then out of nowhere, slashes Mr. Sir in the face. And
how sharp are her nails?
That's question one. Question two, it's deep. Question two is, why isn't he like, I mean, I know it gets inflamed and you can kind of see that, but he doesn't seem like there's been any damage from the rattlesnake venom. Not really. So like, is there really rattlesnake venom in the nail polish? Is it a tale she's telling?
I would bet that it has been watered down significantly. That was my guess.
Yeah.
I think it's not pure venom.
And as someone who has like been in quite a few management positions, I do understand Sigourney Weaver's like the way she reacts here. I don't condone violence. But the fact that she's like, why are you coming to me for something you could solve yourself? You're basically like my assistant manager. Why are you not dealing with this on your own? You're taking these trivial problems to me. I don't need this. Go figure it out, Mr. Sir.
Oh, yeah. He absolutely gets what's coming to him. And not to jump ahead, but I do love that by the end of, like, her, Mr. Sir and Mom are basically the Three Stooges in this movie. And I love that by the end, they are both just like absolute messes. They both look terrible by the end. So moving on, I believe next scene is the Madame
Zero
Zeroni.
Digs.
Yes.
Oh, well, Zero decides to dig Caveman's hole when he gets taken
away. Oh, that's right. Because of the sunflower seeds. That's right.
And so Caveman comes back and he's like, my hole is dug. What the heck? Zero did it. And then we come into, that's starting the whole, like, Zero's going to start digging
his
hole.
Caveman gets his little redemption from his mistake earlier when he agrees to let him read, or help him read.
Yeah, and then we move to the mess hall, and Mr. Sir is getting his food, and someone asks what happened to his face, and I think it's either Zigzag or that unnamed, or what did you say his name was?
Lump
is his name.
Okay.
The old dude who is fully, like, 8 years younger than we are.
So one of them asks what happens to his face, and he, like, gets all upset about it, and there's a rattlesnake sound effect, and I don't care if it's cheesy, I love it. I'm here for it. He looks at him like, I wish you guys could see video listeners, but, you know.
No, make the noise again. Like a pirate.
So, yes. Yeah, basically. And then we move over to... basically, they're out in the field again, and this is when the thing we talked about earlier, Mr. Sir doesn't fill Caveman's canteen.
Ugh.
Thoughts?
My biggest thought is this movie needs, and we say this as three people who are from Texas, this movie requires an incredible suspension of disbelief, because I think the three of us know these boys are dead.
Yes.
This is all fictitious, because in real life, it doesn't matter really, like, if you are not IVing these boys with water intravenously, they are all dead children.
Yeah. That one canteen will not get you through an entire day of hard labor in the Texas sun.
No. And I think they refill them at lunch, and it doesn't matter. You're going to die.
Which, again, we've got to think about that when we are heading toward Zero and Caveman going out on their own.
That was my first realization of this moment, because later on when they go out on their own, I was like, oh, they're not killing them because they need them to live. They're our main characters. And then I thought, no. They would have all been dead ages and ages ago.
Absolutely. Okay, so we have to move forward. Zero comes over to Caveman and says, do you want some water? Which is really kind. And Caveman takes it and sets it aside. He doesn't take a sip.
I also noticed that. I was like, aren't you dying of thirst? Yeah.
Very interesting. And then we get a flashback of Kate Barlow's wreckage. This is her going on a rampage. She's an outlaw now. She's robbing people. Any thoughts on that? I mean, it's just...
I have the tiniest little thought that is so stupid. But having just spent, like... watching this, I was still in a place of like, I'm not crying, you're crying, like trying to get over it. And so my note just says, it's nice to see her smiling again.
Even if it's over her distraction.
Yes, even if I know that like she's not really happy and she still misses him and she's smiling for horrific reasons, I'm just like, you know what, you do you. If this makes you happy, if you can smile after what you've been through, you go for it.
Okay, so moving on to reading lessons. Finally, we get Caveman agreeing to do the lessons, and we find out that Zero's name is Hector Zeroni. Now, I think it's really interesting. Caveman is not surprised by this information, which means his great-grandfather, who always talks about the curse along with his father, never mentioned the name Zeroni?
Did we ever hear the grandfather say the name?
I thought we did.
We just watched. I feel like we did too, but
yeah.
Why is Caveman not surprised?
Right, because we know how deeply this story is ingrained in him. It is.
It should catch him.
He says Zeroni.
I agree. It's a little weird that we don't see a reaction, because I don't buy that the grandfather wouldn't ever say the name Zeroni.
Yeah.
Yes.
He should react. I think he did.
Like, we find out her name when that story is being told, when we have the close-up on her face.
Yeah.
Who's telling that story?
It's not. Nobody's telling it.
No, that's
it.
just a flashback at that point.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know. We also get in, this is the scene where we get the juxtaposition, as we mentioned in an earlier episode, of the different lives that these two people have led, because you discussed early on that even though they're clearly not well off, the Yelnatses are a beautiful family. You know, they're dedicated and they're loyal to each other, and they clearly love each other so much. They have this intergenerational bond, whereas Hector has none of that. And we see that juxtaposed when Caveman says, oh, I know that park. I used to play in that park all the time. And Hector says, yeah, I used to sleep there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I want to throw out something here that's a little controversial yet brave. Madame Zeroni, we never see her not on a porch. Ever.
True. Mm-hmm.
And Hector says, I spent a lot of time waiting for her on porches or playgrounds. Hector has spent his whole life waiting. I put it to you, ladies, that just as much as the Yelnatses are cursed by Madame Zeroni, we never find out why she needed to be carried to the top of the mountain to get stronger. What does that mean? I put it to you, ladies, that the Zeronis are also under a generational curse of some kind, and their curse is waiting. They are always waiting. They are always waiting for somebody else. They are always stuck. They cannot move of their own volition. Obviously, in a larger space. They are not able to take control of their own destiny. And had Ilya, that's his name, had Ilya Yelnats taken Madame Zaroni up the mountain, she knew that that was the way to break the curse, but you have to get to the top of the mountain, but you cannot go there yourself. So she makes this bargain thinking he's going to break the curse, but he doesn't.
Chris, go for it. What do you think?
I am 1,000% on board with that explanation. It makes total sense to me because it does seem that generationally, Zero's family has not been doing well. I mean, there is nothing to indicate success and or wealth or security in that family.
Yeah, at all.
So I 100% could believe that they are under either a legitimate curse. Or,
and we know curses are real in this world.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
they are.
We've established there are multiple curses going on.
But
so why
very
not
real.
This one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense to me because this whole breaking of Stanley's curse and the camp's curse, it also fixes Zero's life. So we should believe that it probably broke a curse for him and his family.
I agree. I think you guys are totally right.
Broke it wide open. I fixed holes. I won the movie holes.
That was a good one.
Go, Kristen! Okay, so the boys start hating on Caveman for getting Zero's help. They start noticing Zero is digging his hole, and Zigzag starts a fight. Oh,
yep.
By the way, I wanted to mention this earlier in the therapy scene. Zigzag's hair is wild.
It's great. Y'all. It's great.
It's out of this world.
It is appropriate for the name.
Yes. Yes, it's very appropriate. So
I have a question here.
Oh yeah.
Why, I'm sorry. So they get into a fight, right? Like you said, mm-hmm. Zigzag picks a fight, but they're doing all this in full view of Mom. Like they're out digging and Mom is there.
Yeah.
And the question is, why does Mom encourage this fight?
That's exactly my question. I put here like, Mom says, come on, Stan, teach him a lesson. So then Caveman goes
back
into the fight.
Yeah.
And then Mom says, that's enough. Like, what did you expect? What, you wanted him to fight, but then you want them to stop?
Does he say that's enough only after Zero jumps in, right? Or is it before?
Zero, he says it before Zero jumps in.
Okay.
But then Zero still goes for it, and he keeps saying, like, no, stop, stop, that's enough. He keeps saying
it. I think he likes to watch, like, again, I think it's a power play for him.
Yes.
I think he's like, oh, look at him, like, the little rats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He encourages the fight in a way, and then, not in a way, he does encourage it.
Yeah, he explicitly encourages it.
Yeah, sorry, that was explicit.
Well, because the infighting also helps him to establish more power over them.
Yep.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
The stronger they are together, the more power they have over him. And
exactly.
We know he's terrified of them having power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's a very wonderful good. Point. Once they come together and start getting violent and forming their own army, now he's in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So Zero jumps on Zig's back, starts choking him. Guys, this is savage. He goes to town on Zigzag. I love it. I'm here for it, but also he could have killed him.
I think that was fully his intention. I think,
yeah.
Like we discussed before, I do not believe that this is Zero's first time either almost killing or killing a person.
Yeah.
We know what he's had to do to survive.
Fighting for his life.
Yeah.
He immediately goes into that fight or flight mode and he decides to fight.
Yeah.
And I mean, Caveman's family to him now.
Yes.
Well, no one picks on Caveman without Zero getting involved.
Totally. Yeah.
Which says a lot about Zero because Zero has lived a life where loyalty is not encouraged. In fact, it's dangerous. It's a liability. Mm-hmm. But
great point.
Zero fully understands you are only here because of my fault, of the sin that I committed, and I'm going to make this up to you. Mm-hmm. Again, I mean, this whole movie has so many themes of atonement. Right? Mm-hmm. You have to atone for mistakes that you have made. And Zero in his small way is like, okay, I effed up. You're here. This is my fault. But this is the only way that I can fight back for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're getting to a pivotal point. Zero and Caveman get in trouble for their whole like digging and reading agreement. And the counselor is calling Zero stupid. Zero loses it. He hits him with the shovel, and I love this moment. He's like, D-I-G, what does that spell? Hits him. Dig. I love it. I don't care how, like, basic.
No, it's wonderful.
It's wonderful.
It's wonderful. It really is.
I have to point out a couple things here I noticed. When the warden comes, the warden's there, and she says, I don't want anybody digging anybody else's holes. Zero doesn't say, I won't dig caveman's hole anymore. He says, I won't dig any more holes. Mm-hmm. He has decided right then and there he's leaving already. And and that is cemented by the fact that when mom gets in his face and, like, you know, hunkers down and gets right in his face and is like, Zero, so stupid. C-A-T, what's that spell? Zero bumps his bag off his shoulder because he knows he's about to run. He's decided from the beginning of this scene, and he is spends the scene preparing for how he's going to do it.
And, and it also indicates to me how many times he's been close to that. I mean, this is something he has mulled over, that he's thought about, you know. And I think he just finally snapped, and he was like, you know what? I can't do this anymore. I'll take my chances.
Yep.
Yeah. And she says, I still expect 7 holes. As in, Zero's hole should still be dug. And I'm like, I'm just feeling the unfairness of this. Are you kidding me?
Because I think, I don't know if y'all agree with me, but I don't think those other boys are going to help Caveman.
They're not going to help him.
I don't think so. No, they've already been mad that Zero was helping him out.
Honestly, Caveman is kind of, it ends up being a non-issue, thankfully, because we see in the next scene that they have gotten a new boy. So there's never any day when Caveman actually has to dig 2 holes, which it's, you know, thankfully this will come up later, but I think it's his bad luck. He can't dig holes. He's really, really bad at it.
Yeah. You're probably right about that.
And then we get back, and the warden is telling her team to destroy Zero's records, which she's like, he doesn't have any family, or I think Mr. Sir says that, or someone, but they decide to not keep his records. And then Mr. Sir tells Caveman, his blood is on your hands.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all, that shook me. I was like, how dare you put that on a kid when it's definitely not his fault? He's just trying to help him read. Caveman played no part in Zero deciding to leave, but Mr. Sir tells him his blood is on your hands, y'all.
I believe that was Mr. Sir's way of trying to absolve himself of responsibility. Yes.
Because they both understand. Yeah.
And I think he felt guilty. I think he felt like they should go look for Zero. I think because I could read some of that on his face when they were having that conversation about getting rid of the records. And I think he decided that he just wasn't going to accept any responsibility for the way this has turned out.
I think that that's true. And I think it's a really important distinction to draw that I don't think these people are sociopaths. They are bad people. But it's not that they don't feel guilt. It's that they deal with it in really destructive and cruel ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then we learn that Caveman's great-grandpa found refuge on God's Thumb, and he was robbed by Kiss and Kate Barlow. I don't have much to say on this. I would love to keep moving forward unless y'all
keep
have
going.
Something to... Okay. Yep. So the new dude, Twitch, he gets his nickname right away. First day. Caveman took a couple days to get his nickname. Twitch is named the moment they introduce him. The cohorts are like, oh, Twitch, how'd you do it? How'd you steal the car, Twitch? How'd he get his nickname so fast?
My takeaway from this, and I noticed that as well, my takeaway was we saw Caveman not have much personality at the beginning. He didn't have much character. He was so scared and earnest. Whereas, you know, I don't think they had a lot to latch onto, and they were willing to bully him. Whereas you look at Twitch and you're like, yeah, I can, there's a pretty easy identifier right there.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
That is a fair assessment. Yeah. I keep saying that's a fair assessment. It's going to become my catchphrase. Okay. So moving forward, So Caveman steals the truck, and it pisses me off that he looks behind him.
God dang it.
For so long.
I know.
This is my same issue with the why didn't Kate close the windows? Like, can y'all not just be sensible human beings for 2 freaking seconds?
Right? I know. So listeners, like, if you haven't seen the movie recently, Caveman looks behind him after he stole the truck, like trying to see if Mr. Sir sees him and is following him or whatever.
And he's watching all the boys cheering him.
He's watching everyone cheering him, and he's doing this for like 10 seconds.
It is a long time to be not looking at the road.
Yes.
There are holes literally.
Holes everywhere.
Literally everywhere. That's the one thing you got to look out for. Yes. So, of course, he crashes into a hole. God damn it.
Which it's we don't even address the fact that, like, I don't know if y'all have been in car wrecks. I definitely have, where I've hit the airbags, and it hasn't been as intense as that. He's doing all the stuff that he does later on with, if not a concussion, lots of trauma to his neck and head.
Oh, yeah, totally. Oh, he should have some serious whiplash.
And when you hit the airbag, like, the airbag fabric is not smooth by any, it is not made to be comfortable. When I got hit with an airbag in the face, it took all the skin off my neck and chest.
No way.
Yeah. Oh, it just like rubbed it all off. Yeah.
No.
Ooh, hurt like a freaking, yeah.
Wow, Kristen.
I then, 30 second anecdote, I was on my way to a singing competition, so I went in and sang. Got top marks, and then came out and wondered why everybody was looking at me so weird, and looked down at my chest and noticed that I, like, it was just raw. It wasn't bleeding, but it just...
You didn't even know going
in? No. I was definitely in shock. That whole...
Adrenaline shock. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't know that I was missing all of that, but it was just...
Holy hell.
Yeah.
Damn. Okay, I think well, on that note.
Yeah. Yeah, so on that... So the moral of the story is I'm a really good singer.
Yeah.
And yeah, him stealing the truck. Yeah. So basically the moral is what we see him do next, which we're going to get into in our next episode. He is doing with a lot of physical trauma.
Yes, absolutely.
And yeah, no water, but we'll get
into no water. Oh, don't even freaking. And we're just pretending that he could survive. That's what we're doing. We're pretending he could survive.
On 150-year-old peaches too. But
Listen, she did a good job preserving them.
Y'all, you have so many hot takes coming in episode 4. So please tune back in. We love you. We haven't figured out a good outro yet. Like, bye? Like, what are
I'm a little lad who loves peaches and onions. There you go. Nailed it for you.
Chris, what's your outro?
Nailed it. Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's perfect.
There you go.
Eat your onions. They
eat your onions.
They're obviously like a cure for everything, as Sam says, which I forgot to mention my issues with that earlier. But yeah, onions cure everything. So
no, that's our outro.
Eat your onions. Bye.
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 Thanks so much for listening. If you have the time, guys, please rate and review us. It would mean the world. It bumps us up in the algorithm as a new podcast. It's huge. Also, word of mouth is going to be the biggest way to share this podcast. So if you know any decrepit millennials that need a little slice of happiness in their life, a little bump of nostalgia, please, please share with them. We would super appreciate it. All right. Tune in soon for the next episode. We love you.